Welcome to the Holy Eros Podcast, your home for all things holy and intimate. I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Sonia. We're here to delve deep into the transformational power of intimacy, sacred sexuality, and the ways relationships shape our lives. These immersive conversations are explorations of a world aching for connection, but struggling to find it.
We meet at the intersection of soul, sex, and the art of the heart, where we steep ourselves in the power of healing through ritual, magic, honest conversations, and of course, pleasure.
We're here to gather with teachers, experts, friends, and explorers who can talk about what hurts and how to heal so we can elevate and amplify the sacred nature of love and restore its power in our own lives and yours.
Enjoy the show. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Holy Eros Podcast. I'm here, Phoenix Amara, with my co-host, Sonia Semenyova. And today we are getting into polyamory versus monogamy, the showdown. So Sonia and I both have very differing kind of experiences in these realms. And so we wanted to get into the nitty gritty, the good, the bad, the ugly, and kind of, yeah, unwrap what it is to take one stance versus the other around relationship orientations, and also to maybe presence, you know, what the gifts can be of either poly and monogamy, and also what the challenges are and how we can work with them. So, I've been wanting to have this talk with you and this podcast for a long time, Sonia, because you've actually been one of the people in my life personally who I've seen do poly pretty good. And so I want to maybe start here with, like, what was your gateway into poly? Like, how did you first get into it? Maybe that's a good place for us to start, because again, everyone's got their own stories. But how did you first get into poly?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure I'm actually in poly. I mean, that I guess I am just by default, but like I am always changing, you know, my beliefs on it. And, you know, just want to clarify for our listeners, there's different ways of defining open relating. And as far as the different terminology, I think it's just helpful to come up with like how I define myself versus like how other people might define themselves within poly. Like when people are polyamorous, that means that they'll have like romantic relationships with multiple people, or the possibility of romantic relationships, mm-hmm. versus something like ethical non-monogamy, which kind of leans more toward, you know, purely physical, erotic relationships outside of a committed partnership. Some people are like what's called solo poly, which is they'll have multiple relationships, but not a primary. The ENM, the ethical non-monogamy, also sometimes called consensual non-monogamy, is also something that people can do on their own and not having a primary partner fixed on it. And then there's also relationship anarchy, which is just kind of everybody is at the same level in a person's viewpoint, and including friendships, right? And so that might mean being able, giving yourself permission to have sex with friends or not, or just having, you know, it recognize that I want to be able to have my friends be at a level that are equal to my romantic partners. So all that is to preface the fact that I have struggled a lot with how I define myself in this space. How I got into it. I mean, I think the first time I ever had a conversation about opening a relationship was when I was 19 and I was dating someone, and we both really loved each other a lot, but we were so young and we were running into a lot of desires. Like we were, you know, those 19-year-old desires where we're like, oh, yeah, explore this. And, you know, yet I love you. And we were together for some time and we had been breaking up and getting back together and like that whole game. And we played with it. We were like, well, maybe, because we had known one other friend who was involved in that lifestyle and they seemed to be pretty happy. And it lasted a really short time. We never actually took action, but the fear of it was really big. So it wasn't until my My child's father and I, which is always an ever-evolving relationship, we were really at a split and saying to each other, you know, we have been together for, I think at that point it was 7 or 8 years, and you know, we love each other a lot. We loved each other deeply at that time, and we had a very strong romantic and sexual connection. But this question of, well, do we have the stability to open up to different partners? And we talked about it for probably a good year. I was doing some practices that were really around engaging eroticism with women at that time. And so it allowed me to feel like, oh, I can actually hold space for both. I don't have to only be totally super monogamous in this. And it appealed to me because I had been in a series of monogamous relationships since I was 21 years old, and it was back to back to back to back. And so I never had any time for myself, and I never had any time to just breathe and flirt and, you know, have that experience. And so that's what led me to where I am now.
Wow. Yeah, I'm really tracking in your share, like the making sure that the foundation is stable or trying to before wanting to open up. I think that there can be like really messy ways that people can explore polyamory if they've been in a traditional monogamous relationship. And I'm also curious to hear like your perspective on, you know, if you think from your experiences that long-term monogamy is possible.
Oh my goodness.
You know, like after the explorations that you've been in, you know, especially with long-term relationships.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is for some people. This is my thing with it that I always come down to, like why I'm resistant to even calling myself, you know, a person. Like I do open relating. That's kind of the way that I would categorize myself is open relating. And then sometimes that shows up as more polyamorous, sometimes it's more E&M, sometimes it's me being devoted to one person. But you know, what I will say about it is that the reason that it bugs me to be in this camp is because there are these what I call the poly evangelists.
Yeah, go on.
And yeah, and they're like, everything is poly. We're meant to be poly. We're only supposed to have open relating. And I also see that camp in the monogamy crowd too. And I've seen that more and more with some people in the spiritual community, you know, it's saying, okay, well, now it's monogamy is the thing. If you're a spiritual person, then you are only going to devote yourself to one person. And I'm just like, I call bullshit on both sides of it. You know, so your question about does monogamy exist, lifelong monogamy, is it possible? I do think it is possible. I mean, we have seen examples of very, very few examples, but we have seen examples of people who have had long-term relationships that have only been one and one person. And I would say that it creates a possibility, but I think it's really all of this is very person dependent. It's relationship dependent. It's timing dependent. There's so many factors that go into it.
Yeah, and this is kind of what spurred even this conversation because we were talking about how someone's orientation is so unique to them, right? It's kind of like diet, right? To say that all people should be vegan because we can't kill the animals. And, you know, and actually, some people really need that iron that they get just from eating beef. You know, I dated somebody, well, I was married to somebody who was like that. Like they literally would have these crazy crashes when they tried to go vegetarian or vegan for, you know, spiritual reasons. And the same thing, vice versa, people that are like, oh, everybody has to, you know, eat, you know, organs and this and that. Like, I really do feel like there is something to people figuring out what works for them in their relationship. I've seen some people do poly really well. I've seen other people do monogamy really well. And I actually just found the term for somebody who can do both, and it's called ambi-amorous, ambi-amorous.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's someone who is actually like flexible or like able to be fluid depending on the nature of a relationship. And the more like I've been stuck in this question for years now of like, well, what am I? You know, am I monogamous? I find I can, you know, be very devoted to a person, but I'm also, you know, at events, I'm very flirty. I love kind of the novelty of like different experiences in group situations. So I was like, maybe I'm a swinger. Maybe I'm more oriented towards like swinger lifestyle, or like, situational E&M. And I think like if I'm to really feel into like what my orientation might be, I think I might be ambi-amorous, which is like listening to what actually the container of a relationship needs. Do we actually need to be monogamous right now for a period of time? Say we're going to have a baby, and then maybe later on we decide, hey, let's set the parameters for opening up. Like, I love the flexibility of that because I also hate labels and I hate being defined by like, well, that's your label. Now you have to, stick with it. I like flexibility. I love flexibility,
Thank you for introducing me to that term. That's a new one for me. And like maybe that does define me a little bit more. I would say at this point in my life, I am far more interested in open relating, but it's just a question of how that looks and what I'm comfortable with. And in the same way, I think that our identities can change. Like I dated exclusively women for 15 years and I didn't even look at men. It just wasn't even part of my landscape. And I think that in a similar way, I can't imagine being in a fully monogamous container where, the rules are super strict. Like, if I wanted to kiss somebody, then it would be a huge disaster, And I also know that I don't want to be in the extreme end of open relating where, you're overscheduled and there's multiple partners going on. I just don't have the time for that. And so I'm curious about that. And
Well, maybe we should delve into like what are the shadows of both, because I think, this is where I've had issues actually, with both poly and monogamy, but like the things that I've had issues with in poly have been, but in my short experiences prior to like last year and beyond, I had found like the level of emotional availability wasn't as big or deep with somebody who is poly because, they're kind of holding a different container with someone else, and then I felt like I couldn't really let myself open safely, right? Because I need a lot of attention, I need a lot of care, and I just felt like I couldn't actually get the level of care, attention, time that I needed in order for my heart to fully blossom. That was something I noticed with poly, and I also felt too that there was actually a lot of performative energies within the poly community. Like, well, we're the more like righteous, evolved path because like, we love openly and like love is not a bathtub. Like that kind of approach, and that fucking rubs me the wrong way. Like, I am so sorry, but it's the same thing as veganism. Like, that's not the only way to live, my friend, Like you were saying at the very beginning.
Yeah, I completely understand. I completely understand. That feeling of like holier than thou, kinkier than thou, polier than thou. It bothers me when people do that in general. But I do want to say something about what you said around the emotional availability. I think that can be true. And I've had really wonderful experiences. Like I'm in a dynamic now where my boyfriend has another person that he's fully in love with. And I'm like, in the beginning of our relationship, I wasn't sure I could deal with that because I was like, well, I want to have that honeymoon space. I want to have that like feeling of being adored and I want to adore you back. And I want to feel like there's space in your life for me. And it's interesting because I think what he continues to show me is that it's possible. That it's absolutely possible. Like, I feel so loved by that man, and I feel him receiving my love so deeply. And I don't feel like it is limited in that way. And so, and I've had this before, with another boyfriend that I had where he had a couple of girlfriends and I had my things. And, we still would come together when we came together, and we just had such deep love for one another. So I think that it is. Sometimes I think what happens is that people who are emotionally avoidant, who haven't quite dealt with their own stuff, they might think they're more equipped to do open relating because then they don't have to fully commit to somebody. But I'm saying to you that like it really is infinite. Like if you really have done your work to understand the question of like ownership and all of that, then it can be really powerful.
Yeah, and I think it maybe depends on what people are looking for. Like, if you're not looking for someone to live with, or you're not looking for someone to have a family with, like, I think too that certain lifestyles go better with one or the other, right? Which definitely, like, I can imagine having children with someone and being poly is probably trickier, right? It's just got different facets, right, that are different. I mean, one of the gifts that I do love about those who orient towards being poly is that they're far more open-minded, which is something that I find often lacking in the monogamy culture. Like, for myself, for example, who, I'm a sexuality coach. I work with people that are, struggling with trauma or struggling with accessing their pleasure, and just how I love to show up in ritual space. And like, I've always found with monogamous relationships that I'd been in is that there was a lot of jealousy. There's a lot of trying to suppress my energy so that they wouldn't have to do their own work around, like, ownership jealousy. Yeah, and I often found that monogamous partners would, like, the relationship conditions didn't support the full spectrum of my, like, blossomed sexuality, even if I wasn't sleeping with other people. Even if I wasn't, it's literally like, oh, you looked at that person. Oh my God, I could feel that you exchanging energy with that person. It's like, holy shit. Like the amount of controllingness that I sometimes felt, especially as a woman. Yeah, which is really what I have noticed in the poly communities. There's like more, I guess, just like understanding, acceptance, and freedom, in a lot of ways, right?
People who are open, it's not to say that we don't experience jealousy.
Yeah.
In fact, many, many, many people deal with a lot of jealousy. And it's just a matter of us recognizing it and saying it and talking about it. Why I was always so resistant to opening up at all was because I had tendencies toward jealousy. My ex-wife was an extremely flirty person. She was extremely flirty. And it really triggered me because she would go around, be at like a party or something, and she'd see a friend of hers and then smack him on the ass. And I'd be like, oh my God. And so that to me was my first intro into allowing someone to have a sexual expression that I didn't own. That really liberated me. I think that her flirtatiousness was A, what drew me in. I loved her flirtatiousness. She was super fun to flirt with. But B, it taught me to understand that we have other aspects that our partners don't own and don't control.
Yeah, and it can create more, even more presence where like you actually see your partner with fresh eyes more because you're like, I can't control them, and the very nature of the framework, right, in a poly dynamic is that you're not supposed to control them. There's an element of freedom, and so it allows for sometimes more gratitude for how someone is in the relationship. My introduction to poly was pretty messy. I think I'd read the book Ethical Slut, and I was living in a collective mansion in Vancouver with like 11 people. It was a wild west of like parties and personalities. A bunch of my roommates at the time were poly. Like they would have full-on crazy sex parties that like I was like, what the fuck? Like, I would like go and hide in a room and I was like, oh my God, I just saw my roommate having sex on the stairs with another guy. Like it was hilarious. I was so green, I was so green. And
I cannot picture you like that, by the way.
oh fuck, it was so I put a sign on my bedroom and I was like, please don't have sex in my bedroom. And I go in there's like an orgy happening on my bed, just stuff like that, right? And but I remember this one moment where like a bunch of those people and some other people, I went to a party and a bunch of them were leaving and I'm like, where are you guys going? And I'm like 27 at the time, right? 26, 27. And they're like, oh, we're gonna go give, so and so their birthday present. And I was like, oh, can I come? Like, so like green, And they're like, no, it's actually like we're gonna go and worship and pleasure them for their birthday, like the whole group of us. And I was like, you should have just seen like the light bulbs like go off in my brain. I was like, that's a thing that can happen? Like, I just remember being like, oh, I was like, I am so green to all of this, you know, and it was really a moment of reckoning for me. And so my partner at the time, we started playing more with like don't ask, don't tell, but it was kind of just situational. You know, he'd go travel, go to a festival, I would go to on a trip. But because there was an element of secrecy that I really didn't like, and you can kind of feel it in a relationship, right? And again, it's connected to shame or guilt versus like actual, for me, what I find is like true poly, you know, where you're kind of honoring each other while still honoring yourself and your desire, you know?
I mean, I think that don't ask, don't tell is like the most toxic form of open relating, because this is what I always, I'm always very careful about who I bring into a dynamic, and I'm careful about who my partner brings into a dynamic. Like I want to acknowledge that whoever we bring into a relationship, even if that person, the other, you know, the metamors never meet, it changes the dynamic of a relationship. And so if you're just in a don't ask, don't tell, there's absolutely no way to have a conversation to say, hey, I am noticing that you are acting in such and such way. And it doesn't feel like what you how you usually act, and it makes me feel X, Y, and Z, right? You can't have that conversation. I tend to be a lot more in the kitchen table, what's called kitchen table poly, for those who aren't familiar with it, where it's like you kind of meet your partners and you know each other on some level, and you know you're friendly, you know, it's not this hidden away thing. And that's how I've pretty much always operated. And it's hard. It's hard because you in that
New
affiliate.
Year's, New Year's
Oh yeah,
Day.
New Year's Day. Yeah, I
New
met my
Year's Day. Remember? What
yep
happened New Year's
Facebook
Day?
friends. Wait,
What
runs.
happened New Year's Day?
Yeah,
What
New Year's
happened?
Day. Yeah, and it was lovely. You were there. I was so happy that you were there. And it was just, you know, okay, let's have brunch. Like, let's, you know, we're all in the same town right now, and like, let's get together. And it's hard because initially, you know, there's the comparison thing, and you know, that old line. I cannot remember who said it, but comparison is the thief of joy. Comparison is the thief of joy. And whenever I notice myself in a state of comparison to a lover's lover, then I'm not able to actually access the joy that can come from, you know, being really happy that someone else that I love has love in some form.
And that level of, you know, what they call compersion, right? Which is pleasure for someone else's pleasure, like, you know, can be really powerful. Like I remember talking with a lover once, and he was pretty green in terms of like any kind of sexual exploration. And I was like, man, I would love to give you the gift of a threesome one day. Like, you know, that would be so beautiful with another woman, you know, like thinking of it as a gift, right? Of that kind of experience. Like that can be really profound and beautiful. Because experiences, right, that open you, that crack you open can be life-changing. You know, in looking at the shadow of monogamy, like one of the things that I often see pretty clearly is like the deep codependence that takes place. Right now, we'll get into the gifts of monogamy here in a moment, but like, you know, you see the couple, right? They can't leave each other's arm. They're like glued at the hip. You know, the guy doesn't have any solid male friendships. The woman doesn't have any solid female friendships. Oh, and then guess what? One day you break up and you finally hear from that friend who you haven't talked to for like 8 years because they just went deep into a relationship portal. And you're like, sorry, we're not friends anymore because you gave up everything for this one person, right? And I see that quite often where people really detach from their communities and they kind of go off in this portal. And what happens is you start to actually like look like each other. You start to like merge and become like one person. Yeah, it's like losing your center, you know, in the throes of a relationship. And that can be really hard because you lose the activities that kept you sovereign. And then you also lose the polarity and attraction, right? And you fall into like expectational relationship.
Yeah. And this is what I'm going to say after having seen my own marriage go into a sexless relationship and having seen this happen with so many people, clients, friends, like lovers. I cannot tell you how common it is after a certain period of time, like let's say 10 years, or something to just go completely sexless, because what you're talking about, it's that we don't have any other identities outside of being this couple. And that puts too much weight on the relationship.
And, couples can't even thrive without having community and around you to support you, right? Like that saying, it takes a village to raise a child. It also takes a village to support a couple, and that's something that I've really seen through the struggles of relating myself, is that, I've like reached out to people in my community and actually had people like radio silence, like not even offer support when I asked for it in a relationship, right? That's not a therapist, right? But just like people that know both of us. And, I think some of the gifts of monogamy is like that presence, like that I fucking love, like the ability to go so deep and having that spaciousness, like the space, the time, the focus, right? Like I sometimes see, the beautiful contrast, right? And again, it's not saying that one's better than the other, but like poly sometimes to me and my nervous system feels a little bit ADD, like, and I'm like, just fucking take all of me right now, like go deep into me, and I want to be able to go deep into you.
I mean, there's
And
beauty in that. Like I loved the periods of time when I was fully into all of my monogamous partners, like that beginning period of time. Like, it's awesome. And just to say, like, the attachment can develop, the depth can develop, and I have seen people in those kinds of situations offer this incredibly sexy devotion. And I think sometimes too, there's something that's really powerful about drawing your energy in and just focusing. It's not for everyone, and I don't want to say again, it's like, I think what one thing that we're clear on in this podcast is that we're not saying one is better than the other, but both of them have real power to them.
I have someone close to me in my life who started out in a throuple situation. So they had two boyfriends, two boyfriends, and was balancing them both pretty well. And then they just started to notice like they really wanted more, and so they started to kind of like, I don't know, like the one person in the relationship in the two was giving more energy and attention. Because one of the other people was like also in a throuple, and what happened naturally is my friend just gravitated towards this one man, and they actually decided to close the relationship after that happened. And they're like, great, like we got clear around that, but they still also got to experience the power of what it was to be open. And I think that's really cool when you get to then know both. And then you can kind of tune in with each other. And I think that that's also what a lot of relationships, especially monogamous relationships, lack, is the conscious design of the boundaries and agreements that you're signing up for. Most people take downloading a template from the collective, right? This is what marriage looks like. This is what a relationship looks like, without being like, actually, we can design this how we want, but it's going to require some honest, truthful conversations around our desires.
God, I think you just said something so big that for everybody who's interested in monogamy, everyone needs to underline everything that you just said about the fact that you can consciously design your monogamy too. That thing that you were talking about around your ex getting jealous if you looked at someone too long, right? You can decide, you can have this conversation with a partner. If it's a monogamous container or open, you can have this conversation that says, okay, I feel like up to this act is okay within our boundary. But anything beyond that feels like a transgression. And I love that because it completely rewrites the scripts on monogamy, because they are very unwritten and unstated in monogamy. In polyamory and openness, like you have to have multiple conversations. Like, I cannot tell you how many conversations I've had with my open relating partners just about dynamics and structure, and the needs change all the time. And so you're constantly having these conversations. It's one of the reasons that, like, one of the shadows with open relating is fucking exhausting. Like, you just, like, there was a point when my My kid's dad and I, when we opened, and like he was involved with someone, and then she and I were kind of involved, and then she was trying to get me to connect with her other partner, and I was having multiple feelings conversations with four people every fucking day, and it was just too much for me. And I was just like, at some point, I bowed out, and I was like, y'all just do whatever you want to do, but I can't have this level of emotional entanglement. It doesn't work for me.
Hey, it's Sonia dropping in here to tell you that we are so happy to have the sponsorship of Moment Mushrooms for the Holy Eros podcast. Moment Mushrooms is a BC-based wellness brand that's focused on the transformative power of psilocybin mushrooms to support inner growth and mental health. We are huge fans of their products. I've especially been enjoying the Flow capsules lately. I've been microdosing them and sometimes a little bit more, and I find that they give me a juicy sense of ease and trust in myself. We're happy to introduce any of our Canadian listeners to Moment Mushrooms. Just go to momentmushrooms.com and use the code HOLYEROS, one word, for 20% off your order. That is HOLYEROS, one word, at momentmushrooms.com and get 20% off.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, you can find those places that works for somebody. Like I think about, I don't know, like the Middle Ages, you know, back in the time where you had your husband or you had your wife, but then like once a year there was that crazy ritual festival where, you know, you would get a wild card and you can go and sleep with whoever you want. Like they had that. They had that. To me, I'm kind of like, that might be my thing, maybe. I don't know.
It reminds me of the key parties, the swingers and the key parties in the 70s.
Yeah, like I'm kind of like that, I think. If I'm more like situational poly or E&M, like where, you know, I'll throw like a crazy wild party and maybe, you know, we all end up in a big cuddle puddle and it's innocent, but then you're stroking people. Like, I don't know. Why not?
Yeah, have the conversation, you know?
Yeah.
And here's the thing that I'll say about this, though, is that, you know, with my like what I have recognized, I have some limits in terms of how many people I can romantically engage with. Like I just have limits on it. I can't have an endless stream of people in my life, because I do have more of an attitude of devotional love.
What is kind of what you're saying is reminding me, it's kind of like friends, right? Like, you know, yeah, I appreciate, you know, the poly sentiment, like love is not a bathtub and you can, you know, it's not about just, you can only have two people in the bathtub. Like love is meant to be shared freely, but it's kind of like the same thing with friendships. Like you can't cultivate 100 different deep friendships, like actual close, deep ride or die friendships. Like you need to be talking regularly, spending time regularly, offering energy to that relationship, you know, often, right? In order for it to stay vibrant and alive. It's like having too many plants. If you have too many plants, you only have a certain amount of hours in the day to water them. And if you have a bazillion, then you're like spending all your time watering all these plants versus like maybe you just have like five, you know, or three that you give consistent energy to, right? Like it is true. There's only a certain amount of time, you know, and that's why some people say like poly is also for like white rich people because they have the time and space to devote to, you know, I mean, I've heard that saying from, you know, some diversity inclusion folks around like, you know, sexuality and racial dynamics, right? Where you got to have a lot of free time to manage more than a couple different partners if you're poly, right? And resources. So that's a thing too, you know.
And I tend to be the kind of person who I tend to go really deeply with fewer people. You know, I can have a lot of friends. I can like party with anybody, right? I can go dancing with anybody, but like
Yeah, you can.
I tend to have, you know, as far as the people I really want to let in, it's a handful. It's a
Yeah.
handful. And they have to kind of earn my trust. And I think that's why I'm more oriented toward, you know, having a limit in the number of purely romantic relationships that I can sustain while being, you know, true to myself and my own self-love journey. But I think you're right. I think it ultimately a lot of it comes down to an hours game, you know, and one of the great shadows in poly is you have these people who are, they're so-called partner collectors. And these are people who have, you know, a partner in every area code. They've got, just basically every night of the week, they've got somebody coming in, and that ends up feeling like they're not going that deep with people, with their partners. And so you'll see this on dating apps, like on Field, which is a dating app that a lot more people who are open relating tend to go on. And they'll say in one of their, in their bio, they'll say, "I'm not looking for any partner collectors." It's a common thing to see, because they want to feel special on some level. And I think we all do, right? And like, there are people who don't want deep emotional entanglement. That's fine. People can make that choice too. But I am not like that. I love to go really deep with someone.
Well, this is also like, I want to say this is one of the gifts that I do love about monogamy is that there is a depth of, love that can be experienced and also like claiming that I don't quite see in poly communities, like claiming energy, like I fucking claim you as my person. Like that is really special. The thing, being in a world of 8 billion people, right? I think everyone at a certain point can attest to having felt like, wow, what makes me so different, right? And that's one of the gifts of monogamy is like having that level of soul connection with someone where they're like, wow, I see you and I want to choose you as my lover. Like that's honestly, I'm a diehard romantic. So for me, I'm like, ooh, like I want a kinky husband, but I do kind of want like primarily monogamish because that to me really that really meets that need for me around depth, around devotion, claiming energy. Yeah, these pieces for me that really feel important because I'm a vast universe here and I don't want someone just to be like, wow, nice stars, and then move along. Like, I want the person I'm going to be with to actually see the vastness of this space and also to see theirs, right? And that does require a certain lens where sometimes I can find, like, at least when I've tried poly dating, and again, it's not to say that I'm not right now or whatever, I'm keeping that kind of private, but, I have noticed that in the past with, going on dating apps and kind of engaging with people that are poly, they're like, okay, well, okay, next, and they kind of like, not being like, wow, you're fucking fascinating. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I think that there's ultimately what you're talking about in meeting some of these people like that. It's a personality thing, because like I have had that multiple times from people who are just like, "Whoa, you're fascinating." And then, I can get a lot of beautiful attention in the time that we have to offer one another. I do also see the flip side of it for sure. You see the people who are just kind of flippant about bringing people in or losing them. And that's not cool to me. Like, if I'm going to go deep with somebody, I want them to be, to just like, I want them to think about not wanting to lose me. I want to think the same about them. I want to think this person is special, and I'm going to make sure that I can do what I need to do, because relationships take some effort and focus, right? Nothing happens just super easily. And I'm going to make sure that I'm going to do my work. I'm going to do my self-discovery, and I'm going to expect that they're going to do theirs as well, so that we can continue to have each other in our lives for the time that it makes sense and in the dynamic that makes sense. So I think we're talking about this stuff, but you and I have talked so much about the throwaway culture of the dating apps.
Yes. And I think that that is the thing that underpins this entire conversation is that it's not necessarily about the container in which you have your relationship. It's about how you're showing up for love and not treating people like consumables, not treating people like throwaway objects that you can just consume and throw away, right? Again, too, like, what I do love about, people that really, really go deep within how to have good, healthy relationships is actually understanding conflict and repair, right?
Yes.
Because people that are what we call consumers of relationships, they're the people that, oh, they run into the first roadblock in a relationship, like, oh, a fight or a conflict. And instead of having a conversation, an open conversation, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm just gonna run away. I'm gonna avoid. I'm gonna break up with this person. And then there's a pattern where then they do this over and over again. One of my exes, holy shit, literally did that. And then I saw him do it with another woman who moved halfway around the world to be with him. Oh, I'm gonna break up with you too, just because, like, oh my God. And then you have this whole culture that's really based around disrespect, hurting people, leaving a trail of chaos behind you, and not doing that fucking work that's needed to like address the patterns.
Yeah, I think that that's really true. And I think that's actually why sometimes open relating has a bad rap, because it does tend to be, it can be kind of experimental, because a lot of times, we're making all of this up. Open relating especially, we're making this up. There are no good examples as far as like mainstream, well-known examples of people who are doing open relating that we can point to and say, oh, they're doing it perfectly well, and I want to model like that. We have nothing because it's so closeted. And in fact, people think you're some kind of a pervert. And so then what you have are, you have a lot of messiness in relationships and open relating, a lot of messiness, especially when people first open. I know that when my kid's dad and I first opened, it was messy. It was not a clean process. And I've seen that pattern play out multiple times with people. You either kind of go into this, it either looks like cheating. So let's say, you're on the apps, all of a sudden you're in a relationship and you decide to be open, and then you're on the dating apps and then you're sneaking. You have this energy of sneaking. You're like, oh, I'm going to take the phone into the bathroom, and suddenly I'm going to change my passcode. And it's stuff like that. And then the other thing that happens is that people will go into the like a frenzy, and they end up dating multiple people, usually too many people. I definitely went through that myself. Like, I overextended myself in the beginning because it's exciting, and I had been in monogamy for so long. And I was like, oh my God, I can go on different dates all the time. And that really took a toll on my nervous system, and it took a toll on how much attention I could put into the relationships that were really meaningful and deep to me. And so I do think that what you're talking about can sometimes show up, but I think it's more to do with our relational maturity and the inability to deal with conflict, the inability to be honest and say, look, this isn't working for me, or this is what I really want, and this hurt me, and I need to repair this with you.
And also two different like relationship templates and styles might suit different points in our lives too, right? Like I'm reflecting on this person that I met like a couple years ago, and I was really interested in them, but they were pretty, they're like, yeah, I'm poly. And I was like, yeah, I can't do that, And then they shared with me like, well, I'm poly now. Like I lost my wife and my kid to an accident and I can never, oh fuck, I know. It was like I cried at the gym when I listened to their message. I was like, I can't even imagine what it'd be like to lose my daughter, in such a horrific way, And he shared with me like, that's why I'm poly now, is because I can never go through that depth of pain again of losing someone and even contemplate it through a monogamous relationship, right? So for them, being poly was a way to still be able to access things like physical affection, touch, companionship without maybe, putting themselves into another traumatic state. And again, like, obviously there's things like therapists for that, but I'm not here to judge that person's avenues of healing, right? And it's the same thing too. I've seen people go from shift from poly into monogamy or monogamy into poly. And I've seen different examples of people who have done it really well and people who have really fucked it up. So yeah, I think what I'm hoping people will get out of this podcast is just thinking about like, well, because I think a lot of people, they put their desires off when they are in a monogamous relationship and they feel like there's no space for flexibility. Like, well, I'm married now, that I guess that's it. I'm never gonna have a wild sexual adventure ever, And I want to dare people to challenge themselves and be like, but actually you get to create the conditions and co-create them with your partner. And if you're not in a relationship where you can actually have those kind of conversations with your partner, if you are not in a relationship where you can have that conversation, then maybe you are not in the loving relationship that you thought that you were in.
So true.
Oh.
Because even in monogamy, we need to be able to have these conversations. We need to be able to say, hey, this concept of like having a work wife or a work husband, There's an emotional entanglement there. And even if you've never physically done anything, there is emotional entanglement. And so you need to be able to, if you're in a monogamous container, you need to be able to talk about what does a work wife mean to you? Are you talking to her late at night? Is it about work only? Right. So yeah, you're 100% right. And I think that we have not really asked monogamy to have the same conversations that we've asked open relating people to have.
Ooh. Ooh, I just want to let that one land. Yeah. And because it is like, oh, well, this is what monogamy looks like. So we're just going to take that instead of being like, actually, what is the definition of love? Right. And if your monogamous relationship isn't allowing for more open honesty, right? Like you might have two people who are both monogamous who are like, yeah, we just want it like that, the way it is. Great. But can you have the conversation of being like, actually, is there more things you want to explore? Yes or no?
I believe we talked about this in a podcast a ways back around this idea of going to a sex club or a sex party as a couple. I knew this guy. I met him on a dating app, and he and his partner were trying to open. And they it was one of those situations that this is another thing that happens is that when you're opening from monogamy, that people get terrified of breaking the container, which rightly so, because it's a big deal. It's a big deal. But they spent a year developing some terms, and by the time I finally met him, I think they had developed some kind of a contract and they were dragging their feet, but he could never actually get on a date. Like, he never felt like safe enough to get out of just ch chatting on text, right? And so I run into them at a sex party, and it was the coolest thing because I was like, oh, you guys kind of found something that works for you, where you're exploring just being in the same room with other people who are in a sexual space and maybe feeling the
Yes.
on, but you're still only engaging with each other. Great. That's a perfectly healthy way to do it. Like, that's another option for monogamy. You could go to any sex party or sex club that you want and only engage with each other. You don't have to be the swingers in the room.
And I want to just maybe transition into a plug here for people that are listening. Like, if you are curious, maybe you are in a monogamous relationship and you're curious about, exploring your sexuality with your partner in a way that feels like, yeah, it adds that element of danger, as Esther Perel talks about in her book, Mating in Captivity, that ends up spicing up your relationship, but you are not like wanting to be poly, you're not wanting to engage sexually with other people. We do have a really cool experience for people from all walks of life that's going to be happening, I believe, this summer. I'm going to just plug it. If you get on our newsletter list, we will reveal more details over the coming months, but it is going to be a really beautiful experience here in Canada for you to explore your eros, your expression, your pleasure in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, I love how vague you were, but just the invitation is just get on our email list,
That is.
and know that one of the things that really guides us with all of the events that we've done, like, people have these fears. We've done these worshiper erotic theater events, and people have these fears that going to one of these events is going to destroy whatever container they have. And we've actually had people buy tickets and then pull out because they were afraid that their relationship was going to dissolve as a result of seeing other people engage sexually. And here's what I want to say is, and this kind of relates to what you were saying about your friend who wouldn't go into monogamy or any kind of deep relationship after what an awful loss, by the way. But there are two kinds of pain. There is dirty pain, and then there's clean pain. And dirty pain is a kind of pain that is us avoiding feeling what we need to feel. And it looks like us going into really negative patterns. It looks like us, chasing after people who are unavailable. It looks like us avoiding things. And it creates these long-term wounds. And then the clean pain is like, God, this hurts like hell, but I'm gonna feel it. I'm just gonna like grit my teeth and go through it and feel it. And the clean pain is the kind that we really want to lean into. And the dirty pain, that unconscious pain, is the kind that we want to avoid. And whenever we're dealing with relationship problems, infidelity questions, or questions around containment, or past transgressions, or like how do we open effectively? It is so important to have a very solid container to work those out in. And so that's something I've always appreciated about the way that you and I have run the worshiper events is that, there's absolutely zero pressure and there's levels of engagement. And so people can just stay and they can, stay up in the massage area and they can just massage their partner's feet for the couple of hours in the after party. They don't have to go into the lover's temple. That is a completely separate space. I just want to say that, like get yourself a container, whether it's, both of us do individual coaching, it's like having that kind of support, coming to events that are not going to blow out your system, right? Do it
Yeah,
wisely.
reading books, listening to podcasts like this one, the such great steps to just even start to engage your partner in the conversation around it, so that you can find other ways of exploring your pleasure in a way that also feels safe for the both of you, right? Like there's so many things you can explore. Shibari, you can go to an event and never touch someone else, but like just be in the atmosphere of Eros. Like I think it's hilarious. Well, it's not hilarious, but it's like it's funny that some people are like, oh yeah, well, I watch porn with my partner, but then they're afraid to come to an event where like there's just people around them making love. And I'm like, actually, that's so much more healing because it's actually you're being immersed in the energy of real passion and love between other people versus watching an actor and another actor exchanging sexual energy and expecting that that's going to like infuse the relationship. Like you actually want to be in the perfume and bouquet of receive. That's why they would have those rituals back in the day. Like they were to receive the dispensation of the goddess, and pleasure. You didn't even have to be touching anybody else. You would just receive that bouquet of energy. Like, oh, it's so beautiful,
What a beautiful way to put that, the bouquet and the perfume of eroticism. Because I think this is something that's really missing in the world and the conversation around sex right now is like eroticism. It's like holding the charge, like letting it just be this slow burn. And that is something that, it within my experience of open relating, something I really love being able to do is just have that sexual tension with someone and not have it be naughty, not have it be something that I have to go and report home about, and like, oh, like I had like work husbands back in the day or work wives, right? And it's like I had these experiences and I'm like feeling guilty about it. And why not just be able to relish in the eroticism and then not necessarily act on it. You can choose whether or not it's appropriate to act.
And that's a difference between, oh God, I had this experience recently when I was at a party. Did I tell you about this? Did I tell you about what happened?
Tell the listeners, I don't know.
Oh my God. I was at this party and, I was at my friend's house. He has parties and I never expect to like ever meet someone I find attractive there just because of, like whatever, right? It's Vancouver, it's da da da. And so I'm at this party and I like turn around. I'm like, whoa, who's that? He's like European, like bulky, whatever. And he is flirting with me, like flirting, grabbing my arm, whispering in my ear. We end up exchanging. He gives me his phone number, asks if I want to work out with him, tells me that he finds me like irresistible, like all these things, right? So I go over to my girlfriend, like, holy crap, I met this guy. He's here. He's from Europe. He's European, of course, And she's like, that guy, she's like, that guy's married and has two kids under two. And I was like, that is so gross. That is so leaky, because what it is it's like this. And I confronted him about it afterwards. And I said, that's not cool, man. You got to be upfront. And he was like, oh, well, I wasn't going to do anything. I just wanted to work out and I know my limits. But like, there's a difference between, again, what you kind of shared, where it's like the exchange of that erotic energy, but then not acting on it versus leading somebody on. And who knows? He said that he wouldn't do anything, but he got my number, told me I turn him on. And so for me, that was like, man, that's just leaky and gross.
It sounds like he wouldn't do anything because you called him out.
Yeah, exactly. No, well, the thing is that he texted me like 2 weeks later and he's like, are we okay now? Like, you still want to work out? And I was like, Elite. I just didn't know what else to say, you know, because.
That's that cheating energy. And I think that is one of the shadows of monogamy is the cheating aspect. And granted,
Yes.
you can cheat in open relating. I want to make that clear. It is not a license to just do whatever you want. And in fact, there are far more conversations about dynamics in open relating than there are in monogamy. Because it's like in monogamy, it's just you cheat and then it's a secret and then somebody finds out and then they're butt hurt and then the marriage ends, right? That's how it typically goes. But yeah,
I'm
like,
laughing, but it's not funny, but I'm laughing.
well, because I mean, it's funny because it's a fucking trope at this point, It's like, how many marriages end in divorce and how many of those are due to infidelity? I mean, I think Esther Perel's almost her entire, career is based on this concept of infidelity. And how do we manage this within relationships? And so if we don't just acknowledge that you're going to have attraction, you're going to have desires. And so if this man, if he was truly being honest with his partner about his desires, then that would be one thing. And being honest with you, frankly, like right up front, like, hey, so I'm really interested in you. I have another partner. I also have two young kids. This is about how much time I can devote to you, but I'm very interested in spending some time with you rather than trying to kind of muscle you into something, And
And that felt like also like there was a lying energy. There was just a lying energy. It wasn't truthful, and that the fact I had to find out from my girlfriend, like it, I'm sorry, but no, I'm not that kind of person, so
yeah, totally.
but
And I respect that. It's especially just as both of us being mothers, like
oh yeah.
we can recognize how challenging that is to imagine like your partner stepping out on you when you have a very, very young child because you're so dependent on other people in your life to support you.
Well, and that was like my messy experience with poly was being pregnant and then having a partner be like, oh, I want to explore poly now. And I was like, this is really not the time because as a woman, like you're the most vulnerable that you're ever going to be in your entire life. And you actually need your rock there, I mean, to say that I was depressed and suicidal is an understatement. Like it was the worst thing ever to happen, And I think, there's this piece around, I think the intentions of why someone wants to explore poly in the first place is really, really important. And, what came out of that experience for me was recognizing that a lot of men, when they start their journeys of fatherhood, they don't often have the rites of passage. They don't have men who they can talk to about, like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my freedom, or the feeling of losing my freedom, right? More responsibility. And so just going to cheating. They actually say, like, the stats are like 60 to 80% of new fathers cheat on their partners.
Okay.
And, it's a hard conversation to have, but it's one that's very important because, like, I think it could save a lot of relationships, right? In some regards, because it's already tough enough becoming a new parent, and then you're dealing with this shadow, right? That regardless if your partner finds out or not, the shame that someone feels when they cheat. I've cheated before in the past. The shame that you carry, it is horrible. It's the worst feeling until you reckon with it. And my own experiences have taught me a lot. And now it's like I'd rather just have a conversation with someone than cheat and hide, right? Like I haven't,
Absolutely. It's horrible. It's a horrible situation on all sides of it, right? And
Yeah.
it's this is why I do believe, you ask me, do I think that monogamy is possible lifelong? Like for me, no, not lifelong. It's possible for me, but for sprints of time. And I don't know when that sprint is going to be up for me. And so therefore I need to be honest with myself around like I need to have the ability to have connections when they arise that are meaningful to me and in whatever I want to define meaningful, and respectful of the boundaries that are put into place around the relationship. Like I can't just go out and willy-nilly do whatever I want. That's not how I operate.
Oh, well, okay, I know that we need to wrap up soon, but like even this other shadow too in monogamy where like I've experienced, like, for example, one of my roommates, right? We're very, very close. And when he dated somebody, like she was jealous if we would talk in the kitchen when she was around. I want to be able to have the freedom to like hug my friends, to cuddle my friends, because they're my fucking friends. Like affection and love between friendships, between people is so beautiful. It's so beautiful to hold your friends, to cuddle them, to, kiss their little faces. Like, I adore that. And I don't often see that all the time in monogamous relationships because there's an unspoken agreement there that we're not affectionate and that we only share our affection with each other and no one else.
Yeah, that is very, very limiting.
Yeah.
And, here's what I want to say that is an interesting place to close. For people who have listened to this, the history of our podcast together, like they've probably heard me talk about different dynamics that I've had with my kid's dad. And I mentioned that we did open toward the end of our relationship. And, I put out a post on Instagram today talking about how he's really become such a big source of friendship for me. And in this really deep, weird way where I'm like, we both will say to each other that we love each other, we'll like do extended hugs, but we're completely platonic. And I think that having tested the waters in opening a relationship, it allowed us to more consciously uncouple because we were able to say, okay, here's you outside of me, and kind of slowly meander away rather than having this massive break where then we hate each other and I'm like, get out of my face. And so I do think that playing with the boundaries is really important. I think that every relationship has to have a renegotiation conversation after a couple of years. And part of that might be, okay, well, I think I want to be ready to, have this kind of dynamic with other people involved, And I just want to say, like, I think, I sat with it for a number of years. I'm like, did we ruin our relationship by opening it? And we both, he and I have this conversation sometimes in the height of us splitting, where we said, I think we broke this. And it was a beautiful, God, the love that like that man and I had, just the most amazing connection. And we did break it, but I also think that we needed to renegotiate the contract. It was time. And so we did it in the nicest possible way while also destroying each other at the same time, right? But it was just that ability to be like, okay, I'm going to see him in love with someone else, and he's going to see me in love with someone else. And yet we still choose to have a dynamic together. We still choose a relationship together. I think it's honestly the reason that we're able to be friends.
Yeah, there's this tradition. I can't remember where I saw it, but it's like this tradition that talks about like actually only exchanging vows for 7 years, and then at the end of the 7 years, coming back together and being like, do we want to renew this again? And I think that again, like for everyone listening, is to really consider like that you don't have to just download a relationship template from the collective, that's unconscious and you blindly follow those rules, like to take ownership over how your relationship looks and feels like. And there's a really great resource in our resource library on our website. If you just input your email address, you'll get access to it. And it's called the Operating Manual. And it's a really great editable Word doc that walks you through how to actually consciously create the relationship structure and agreements and boundaries for relating with someone else. It's really a fabulous resource. It's free and you can find it there. So check it out and stay tuned for more juicy conversations coming up this year in 2025 with Sonia and myself on the Holy Eros podcast. Thank you, everyone. Until next time.
Bye.
If you enjoyed today's episode, if you got something out of it, if what was shared really touched you, impacted you, transformed you, or shocked you, we'd love to hear from you. Feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. Feel free to leave us a review on Apple or Spotify and let us know what are your thoughts on what we discussed today.